In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program today, we'll take a look at FOIA requests, how the federal government is handling them. The Justice Department just out with some data on that. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller following it, and he will join us to talk about where the federal government's headed, how your agency is doing, and what they can do to improve their response to a FOIA request and so on. We start, though, with a follow-up to a conversation we had back in May, the second week of May. Ryan McCullough from GovPlace, the vice president of federal for GovPlace, was my guest. And as happens from time to time when I get somebody in that I get a talk on with and don't get to everything that I'd like to get to, we didn't get to everything we wanted to get to, Ryan, so I'm happy to have you back on the show with me again today.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
We talked about a lot of the typical things that I talk to IT people and IT companies about. We talked about cloud computing and data center consolidation and all those kinds of things. Those are obviously still on the minds of a lot of CIOs and now CFOs in government. As we get close to the end of the fiscal year, they're seeing a lot more business in that way. And we'll talk about the fiscal year end in a little bit, too. But are those still the things that the agencies are bringing to you and saying, we're going to need solutions in this, and we wonder what you might be able to do for us?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of focus on those types of transitions, those types of solutions in particular. There's a variety of things from that through telework, which is obviously gaining a lot of speed and momentum inside the industry. Really, it's all around how do we more efficiently and effectively manage infrastructure, and how do we more efficiently and effectively use the applications that allow us to do our jobs, to accomplish the mission as an agency.
Yeah. Telework is just such a back and forth. I mean, I don't think I've seen anything in government that's been on such a roller coaster ride, especially over the last like 2 years. Telework bill in the House and it failed. And then it came back a couple of weeks later and it passed. And now it's kind of in a holding pattern while everybody waits for the Senate to do whatever it is that the Senate's going to do, which looks like a lot of nothing between now and November, but that's a whole nother story. Is there finally momentum building for telework at agencies, do you think? Are we seeing enough of the mid-level managers saying this is something that we finally need to get together?
Well, so a couple of things. First of all, I think that everyone knows that in some form or fashion that some sort of telework legislation is likely to pass for a variety of reasons. Whether it be to increase the productivity of the individuals who are doing the work, whether it's to allow an agency to reduce costs, to reduce traffic in the area for green initiatives. I mean, there's a variety of reasons why telework makes sense. So agencies are already starting, whether it's under congressional mandate or not, to think about the ways that they can use this technology, deploy it effectively, safely, and securely inside their environment, and let workers accomplish the things they need to do. So I absolutely see momentum building in terms of people doing the analysis, figuring out best ways to get there, focusing on the security aspect, be cognizant of the functional capabilities that the workers need to have, regardless of what environment they're working from, and really creating it as an option. It's with the prospective influx of the next generation of workers in the government, this is going to be increasingly a group of individuals who have always lived in a remote computing environment. You know, they do everything. All their applications are web-based. They're doing everything from their home location. People live inside of Facebook and inside of all these other things. So they're used to collaborating in that way. They're used to getting work done in that fashion. And I think the more the younger generation comes into the government contracting arena, the federal agency service arena, they're going to start to want that as an alternative to how they get the job done.
Yeah.
It's just going to be necessary.
I've seen telework, from my perspective as an outsider looking in the federal government, kind of turn into a sandwich where you have one layer of bread at the top, which is the secretaries and the CIOs and the C-level people, and then underneath them, maybe a layer or two saying, we really need to push this. This is really going to be a benefit to our agency. People are really productive. We get it. We want to make it happen and devote the resources to it. Then you go down to kind of the bottom, up a number of layers. And that's another piece of bread where people are saying, I'm the rank and file worker. I want to do this. I can be more productive, et cetera, et cetera. But there's still that level, that layer of people in the middle of that sandwich, that are saying, I'm not sure. I just don't know if I can trust myself or my people to be able to manage to get everything done that needs to get done if I can't put my eyeballs on them every day. Are we starting to see that middle layer shrink, do you think?
I think you're going to have to. I don't think there's any way to prevent that from happening. I think that increasingly people are getting more comfortable at all layers, in all layers of your proverbial sandwich there, are getting more comfortable with the approach to telework because they're taking, I think they're appropriately taking the approach of how do I securely allow this kind of work to get done? How do I securely allow telework to exist in my infrastructure? When you're starting from that perspective, at least you're taking off the table the things that are truly game, showstoppers for putting that in place. The other things that I think people are starting to recognize is the tremendous cost savings that can come as a consequence of this. You know, if you can start to look at the types of technologies that are out there today that allow you to allow remote work, telework, coop, all the things that can happen from any location without having to issue three, four different systems to all the different people in your agency, you can be a major cost reducer, and it can also potentially eliminate the impact of the snowstorm and all the things that really got the telework conversation going early on. So I think the layer is shrinking, and I think what it really boils down to is people are seeing it as a foregone conclusion.
You mentioned COOP, and I wonder, we talk about these things in silos so much. We study silos in the government, and then we, and by that I mean me, do the same thing. And we act like telework is one issue, and we're going to talk about this over here. And then COOP is another issue, and we'll put this right in the middle. And then over here we have cloud computing, and they're all connected. The reality of it is they all work together. What's the connection in your mind, first of all, between telework and COOP? In my mind, when I think about COOP plans at agencies, it's all telework. I mean, it's working in a remote location, which is the whole point of it, right?
That's exactly right. Okay. I mean, if you look at – this is where you've got to be mission-focused a little bit, or at least organizational goals, objectives-focused. Telework plays into continuity of operations. It plays very heavily into cost reduction, cost management inside the environment. It plays into the ability – well, certainly it intersects with cloud computing because you're going to be using all essentially web-based applications and things of that nature. And it's a matter of how you manage that after the fact. But all in all, the things that telework ties into are all kind of across the board – agency mission objectives. It touches on each one of them, allowing workers to stay productive, allowing us to increase and draw in more workers into that environment and reduce costs long term.
Am I unique in that silo mentality when it comes to some of these things, or do you still see that at agencies where they have a hard time connecting these pillars together and understanding how they all are kind of the same thing, just different appearances?
I think that when people are, I wouldn't say you're in the minority. I wouldn't, you know, I think there's a fair split in there. I think a lot of the people who are making these decisions, who are making determinations for agency strategy and things like that, they are well versed and certainly educated on all these things enough to understand how they intersect and how they impact one another. Telework in and of itself allows for the functional capability of COOP. It needs to be considerate of the challenges associated with security, and it needs to understand how to leverage things like cloud computing. I think that people talk about them in silos, but what you'll find is through collaboration, through discussion, and through figuring out the ways to get there, they tend to intersect at what the ultimate solution looks like to make the functional piece a reality.
Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. What exactly is the connection between cloud and telework? How does one make the other better? We'll talk about that with Ryan when we continue.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting
slide. Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive best-in-breed solutions. Whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity, we're ready to listen, and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to Dell.com/deliver now.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away. This federal government update is brought to you by the U.S. General Services Administration.
Colleges and universities are not producing the number of qualified graduates needed for entry-level cyber and IT positions, according to the Department of the Navy. The Navy says it is working with academia to identify these skills gaps and develop competency frameworks for critical IT functions. To offset the skills shortfall, the department says it will continue to invest in job-specific training and offer advanced education opportunities for new employees. It has also created its own IT Careers website to find new talent.
Whether your mission calls for improving information security or upgrading your technology applications and hardware, GSA offers a full range of IT solutions that will help you manage operations and resources. To learn more, visit gsa.gov/technology/options. That's gsa.gov/technology/options. Or call 888-377-0070. That's 888-377-0070. GSA, your everything source for IT solutions.
Good news for the uninsured and the insured. U.S. Healthy People 2020 Network is now offering annual health physical to the public. Members receive comprehensive health assessments for hypertension, thyroid, kidney, osteoporosis, diabetes, cholesterol, heart screening, and more till the year 2020. Find out your risks for heart attack or stroke. Take the extra step you and your family need to stay healthy till 2020 and beyond. Call 301-386-2223 or visit ushealthypeople2020.org for details. Sponsored by Prevent First, a nonprofit health organization.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Tuesday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. It's one of the most controversial provisions of the GSA schedule contracts, the price reduction clause. We'll have an explainer from the man who literally wrote the book on the GSA schedule contracts. And you remember the tragic shootings at Fort Hood last year? We'll talk to the two people responsible for bringing the shooter down. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, my guest. And We've been talking about cloud computing and telework, and I mentioned that sometimes we have a tendency to put some of these things in silos. I'm happy to hear that you say that the agencies are beyond that to some degree, that at least most of them. I know that there's no such thing as uniformity agency to agency. But what exactly is – when somebody says – if I put a bunch of stuff in the cloud, like GSA just took a whole bunch of their all their email accounts to the cloud, how does that make telework easier, better, cheaper, whatever benefit it is that, that the agency's looking for?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the focus around the – or the understanding that all most applications these days that people are using are web-based already. Moving email into the cloud essentially gives you a web-based email application. Being able to access through the web any of these applications that you use on a regular basis is what makes the whole thing work a little bit more efficiently. So, having access to all your applications from a remote location is what telework is, in all its form and function. And so utilizing the cloud allows you to reach a number of users in a secure fashion, done appropriately, in a secure fashion, with full access to all the things they need to do on a daily basis, email included.
Mm-hmm. Is security still the first thing people ask about when they talk about whether to do it or not do it, make the move?
I think both in telework and in cloud computing, it is the number one question.
I guess what I find interesting about the whole discussion about security when it comes to the cloud, we hear very, very, with 50 more varies, few stories about breaches. Fewer breaches, it seems to me, when it comes to stuff that's been stored in the cloud than what we hear about stuff that's being stored on networks. Are people starting to figure out this might not be as bad as it initially sounded?
Well, that's the reason that's kind of dangerous, I think, is because one, I don't think we've seen a major shift at this point.
Okay, so there's not a critical mass yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the point where everybody's moving everything to the cloud, so let's not imagine that's got hook, line, and sinker.
All right, fair enough.
Let's also talk about the fact that there are different approaches to cloud computing. Just throwing the applications into an area where everybody can access it via the web obviously doesn't make it secure. More importantly, there are different levels of security that you can apply depending on how you want to access the cloud environment. When you talk about advocating cloud computing, it does not mean that you need to advocate a wholesale move to the commercial cloud environment. I don't think that that's the answer. I think that what you're seeing is where the agencies have moved to the cloud. In most instances, they are moving to a cloud that they, what I will call a private cloud inside their own infrastructure, so that you can gain the benefits of leveraging an optimized infrastructure, of reaching more users, of improving the utilization inside your environment, maintain your own security controls, establish your requirements from a security perspective, gain the benefits without having the as much risk as associated with security.
But what's really the difference between a private cloud and just plain old data center consolidation? I mean, is it kind of the same thing?
No, data center consolidation really is well. When you talk about data center consolidation, there's a few different aspects to it. But if you're talking about strictly server and compute consolidation, that's where you're leveraging things like virtualization to improve the utilization inside your data center. Basically, you're going to get more computing power out of the same frame than you would get if you did it all on physical infrastructure. That's a big piece of what happens inside data center consolidation. When you're talking about a cloud environment, what you're really talking about doing is leveraging that consolidated data center infrastructure. So it can be built upon it, but you're moving all the applications there, all the users are accessing all the things they're going to do from that environment via the web, via a web interface. So the applications will exist in that location for the agency and then be available through the cloud is really the internet. That's what the cloud is in a cloud environment.
And so it's just a matter of knowing where on the internet your stuff is going to be and which vendor is going to be able to give you that access in a way that you're comfortable with and meets the requirements that you have.
Right. And if you're the agency with the private cloud environment, you're controlling the security parameters of how you access those applications.
Okay. Excellent distinction there. Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. When we come back, I have some quotes from the last time you were here, Ryan. I'm going to bring your words back and get some follow-up. I'm not going to stick you, though. So I'm gonna, we'll do that when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. The markets are reacting to lower-than-expected earnings from Dow Chemical and Procter & Gamble. Strong corporate results had been the main reason behind higher stocks in recent days. One bright spot today was Pfizer, the world's largest drug maker, posting a better-than-expected profit. The Dow's down 36 points, the Nasdaq lower by 11. Economic data continues to throw a wet blanket on the recovery. New orders received by U.S. factories fell more than expected in June. That was the second straight monthly decline for factory orders. Sales of previously owned homes fell to a record low in June. But Americans are hitting the showrooms. Ford says its domestic sales rose 3% in July compared with the same month last year. And General Motors posting a 5% gain. Sales of its Chevrolet, Cadillac, GMC, and Buick were up nearly 25% from a year earlier. Chris Maurer, CNBC, Business Radio.
Ford and Lincoln Mercury Service presents Mike Rowe with some important information about the big tire sale.
Well, that about sums it up, really. It's a tire sale, and it's big.
I'll say, when you buy four Goodyear, Continental, Hankook, Yokohama, or Pirelli tires, you get a $100 cash rebate. $100! You forgot to mention that, Mike.
Well, that's why you're here.
Thank you.
It's the big tire sale at your Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers.
See participating dealership or visit genuineservice.com for mail-in rebate and details through 83110.
Like a lot of people, Marlo Scott wanted to do things differently. So she created her own business and made Ink from Jace her business card.
I was doing the corporate grind until I opened my cupcake wine and beer bar, Sweet Revenge. I love Ink. I get rewards on every purchase. It has twice the acceptance worldwide as American Express. And free Ink cards if I need them for my employees.
Make your mark with Ink. Go to Chase.com/Ink. Chase what matters.
Acceptance rates based on global, not domestic data. Restrictions apply. Ink cards issued by Chase Bank USA and subject to credit approval. Copyright 2010. JPMorgan Chase & Company. All rights reserved.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new public website has been launched by the Department of Energy, designed to promote a better understanding of gasification technology, an increasingly popular alternative to converting feedstocks like coal and biomass into useful products such as electricity or fuels. Officials say gasification is anticipated to be the technology of choice for future near-zero emissions coal-based plants. The process uses heat, pressure, and steam to convert any carbon-based raw material into synthesized gas. The website, dubbed Gasifopedia, contains both introductory and in-depth information. You'll find the new Gasifopedia through the Department's Energy Lab website at www.netl.doe.gov.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Profile America, Tuesday, August 3rd. Today marks the 27th anniversary of a unique battle against crime. It's the annual National Night Out. All across the country, citizens, law enforcement agencies, and neighborhood organizations will gather for block parties, cookouts, and parades. The idea is to heighten awareness of crime and drug prevention efforts, increase support for local anti-crime programs, and strengthen partnerships between communities and police. Last year, more than 36 million people in 15,000 communities took part in the National Night Out. And there is plenty of crime to be on the watch for. Each year in the U.S., there are just over 1.4 million violent crimes and more than 9.8 million property crimes. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
The The case is about an attorney who managed assets for elderly clients.
At some point during this process, he began diverting money to his own expenses and his own personal business interests, which were very risky. He lost all their money.
While saying their investments were secure, Special Agent Todd Yorheim of FBI's Atlanta Division says the bulk of this began in about 2006.
All total, he lost over $4.3 million that we were able to identify based on the 9 victims that we identified.
Yorheim says there's a lesson.
People who are in positions of public trust just need to be honest with their clients in these financial times. It doesn't make it better to add deceit to the mix.
The subject maintained his innocence.
When we started interviewing victims, it became apparent that he was definitely covering up his scheme.
He pled guilty to wire fraud, receiving just over 5 years. He also has to pay restitution of the over $4.3 million. FBI investigated with the Secret Service and the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join input for an executive breakfast featuring Lieutenant General Jeffrey Sorensen, Chief Information Officer for the Department of the Army. He'll discuss upcoming technology opportunities, plans for improving IT system operations, and the CIO G6 campaign plan and strategy. That's August 10th at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean. Brian Haney, Senior Vice President, Member Services for Input, will also identify major technology investments within the Department of the Army. To register, contact Input Events at 703-707-3698.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Ryan McCullough of GovPlace. And Ryan, you were here with me the second week of May, and we talked about some of these same issues. One of the things that we talked about when it comes to cloud computing is this apprehension about moving into the cloud, the claim of that there is some slash a lot slash too much risk for some agencies to want to make the move. You had an interesting approach that you proposed to agencies to communicate about what their issues are with you, and I'm going to play that back for you, and then I want to continue the conversation that we started back in May.
When you're talking about requirements definition, or you're talking about the definition of success, that's where you don't allow statements like, oh, there's just too much risk. Well, tell me what those risks are. Let's get them out. Let's get them up on the board. Let's get them down on a piece of paper. Let's lay out all the things that we think are a potential problem. And that's where doing some of the whether you want to do crowdsourcing to go out and figure out who else has done this before, other issues that have come up. I mean, build the list as comprehensively as you want. And then engage, my ask to the agencies would be then engage industry to say, these are all the things we see as a problem. Tell me how you're going to address it and show me how you're going to get me from A to B.
Okay, those are your words back in May. I'm curious to know if you've seen any progress in getting the agencies to open up and be more willing to talk to you way, way, way before the actual business is done.
Sure. So there's a few different, I guess, levels of answer to that one. Specifically around the subject of cloud computing, I think that we have seen an increase in the amount of interest in the willingness to consider a move to cloud of specific agency critical applications. Email being one of them. Email is something that we've seen come out from a variety of different places. Now, in terms of eliciting from industry their approach, how they might go about accomplishing the requirements set forth by the agency, that's where I think there's a difference in the level of granularity and the level of completeness of requirements that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen things as simple as I need email for all my users and tell me how you do it through page, 20, 30, 40 pages worth of requirements around security, around functionality, around capability, around any number of things. And that's where you really start to differentiate what the offering can look like. So tying back to what we were talking about the last time I was here, it's a matter of I think the agency engaging industry to lay out all those requirements and actually understanding all of the possibilities. There's a limitation to requirements when you don't understand what's possible. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see the agencies continue to move towards in terms of reaching out to industry. I think there has been more openness, more consideration of the cloud. I don't know that I've seen as aggressive a move to engaging industry to understand what's possible as I might like to have seen, but I think it's certainly trending in that direction.
We'll talk some more about that later on in the hour, because the collaboration piece is something that we did talk about when you were here before, and Martha Johnson's talked about it quite a bit, and we'll get to that later on in the program, though. I do wonder, though, when it comes to just staying on the subject of the cloud, I don't know how to present this exactly that it doesn't seem to kind of in the weeds. The idea of getting your stuff where you want to be able to have control over it and yet have the security balance, is that still mystifying the way that it has been to some people in the past, and even at the sea level, where people are saying, I just can't get over this idea. I know that you say it's this, and I know that you say the security is this high quality and so on and so forth, but it's like my own mental block and I can't get past it. Are we finally getting past some of those, do you think?
I think more and more you're seeing agencies engage the possibility, or accept the possibility of moving to the cloud and mm-hmm. really start to evaluate it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of the way that we're overcoming some of the challenges, legitimate challenges, by the way, this is not ethereal nonsense of boy, security is a problem. It actually is. Mm-hmm. When you look at pure commercial cloud environments, they just don't have the same security protocols that a lot of agencies mandate inside their own environments,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think you're seeing this transition to this kind of private cloud type of architecture. You know, the people who run our agencies, the IT organizations within those agencies, have enough clarity, have enough understanding of what's in the market today to know that it's viable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's being evaluated. So I think the answer is it's certainly moving in that direction. I don't think it's mystifying. I think it's finding out what the line is, the appropriate place is to determine what needs to be within our own private cloud infrastructure and what are the things we could potentially outsource to a larger cloud environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's still a little unclear.
Okay. It will be interesting to see how that develops, because that what you're saying fits with what I'm hearing on both sides of the equation. Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Let's get into the collaboration part of it when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Is the killer capture program the U.S. is using in the tribal areas of Pakistan and Afghanistan working? A New York Times report seems to show some evidence that it may be. American intelligence reporting, according to the paper, has recently revealed growing examples of Taliban fighters who are afraid of moving into higher-level command positions because of those lethal operations. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a lot of talk about thinking outside the box, but what about thinking inside the box? Airink is a company that looks at every angle when solving problems. In fact, Airink recently helped convert regular cargo containers into sophisticated air traffic and communications control facilities for use abroad, combining the shipping box and actual equipment into one turnkey system. Imagine that. Log on to www.arinc.com to learn more.
Which agency has the best food or cafeteria? Who has the best gym? What about the agency with the best overall location, the best parking or transportation options? Who's the best dressed Fed you know? Federal News Radio is having some fun this summer with our Best of the Federal Government feature. Throughout the summer, we'll ask you to vote for your favorites. Voting has officially begun. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for Best Of. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Best Of.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck.
Phil Bond is the president and CEO of Tech America.
Nobody wins when programs fail. We have announced the formation of a commission chaired by Linda Gooden from Lockheed Martin and Steve Kelman of Harvard, who knows a thing or two about this given his service in the Clinton administration. We're going to serve those right up to folks on a well-thought-out, vetted discussion of some of the big issues and what the government could do to meet with success.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, and we're talking about collaboration at the agency-to-vendor level. And one of the things that we talked about when we were here before is that very idea, the concept that the agencies have maybe historically been a little bit slow to embrace the idea of really communicating with you and your peers before the process of writing the request even begins. There's been a tendency, from my observation, for these conversations to start after the RFP's already out, and many times vendors say, hey, wait a minute, but we can do this too. And then you have requirements creep, and you wind up with projects that are, you know, turn into the things that make headlines on federalnewsradio.com and so forth, which nobody wants to be involved with. We talked about the possibility of this kind of collaboration when you were here before in May, and this is what you had to say back then.
We're all working towards the same mission here. We all want to achieve success for the citizens of this country, for the success of this country, and for our government. And I think that there's a benefit that can be gained if the government would more aggressively engage industry in helping to define those requirements, define what success looks like inside strategic objectives they've got in their organization, whether it be tactical system implementations, whether it be programs that are directly aligned to and related to their mission. Reach out to companies who have a proficiency in doing performance-based engagement and let them help you define what success can look like so that you can find a variety of innovative ways to get there.
So essentially what it sounds to me like you were saying there was, talk to us beforehand, really get a sense, Mr. or Ms. Agency, of what it is that you want to do. Let us help you be aware of what all the possibilities are. We're not going to try to help you write the proposal, but at least be aware of all the things that are possible and then tell us what solution it is that you need. Do I paraphrase you correctly?
You nailed it. I'll let you do my quotes for me from now on because you say it much more succinctly.
All right. Since you've been here, Martha Johnson and her team at GSA have talked about collaboration and that same relationship extensively. We've heard it a number of times from a number of different people. Are you starting to see that trickle down to the agency level? Are you starting to see that trickle down inside GSA to other people who are really doing it, saying, all right, Ryan, we don't want this to look like it's wired, so we're going to make this open and transparent. We're going to have the same conversation with all of your peers, with all of the other companies that want our business. But here's the deal. Is that starting to happen, and if so, to what degree? Fast enough, slow enough, whatever?
So I think that we are seeing a trend there that's obviously faster in some places than others. There's a number of groups that I can think about that are engaging the same kind of strategy, that GSA has been talking about. Where I think we're seeing less of it is on the task order side, the things that are specifically a particular mission requirement being addressed. I don't think we've seen I would like to see an increase in the amount of industry agency collaboration that happens around understanding the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We still see it in forms of RFIs and things like that where there's an influx of paper and how much of that really gets translated. It's tough. It's tough to weed out the amount of information you can get in that kind of environment. So it's really the ongoing kind of engagement that has to exist between industry and government using both from the agency side, the understanding of the mission requirement, and leveraging people inside the industry organizations that have a fundamental tie to that particular agency mission. For example, NIH's NITAC is a group who runs their ECS3 program, their CIOSP2 program. You know, they're going to be coming out with CIOSP3. They've built an organization that's founded upon industry and agency collaboration in terms of understanding the mission goals and objectives of the NITAC, how that supports NIH, Health and Human Services as a whole, the function and the goals and the objectives of health IT, which is becoming an increasingly important subject and something that's going to be incredibly impactful for the citizens of the United States in terms of making advances in healthcare and things of that nature. You know, they've got this constant industry advisory council organization just within their group where they're doing constant sharing of information. They're constantly looking at what are the best ways for us to execute and perform well for the collective customer, which is the government and the citizenry. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things are happening, and they're happening very effectively with organizations like that. I think the more we can get that down to the tactical level, and the more we see things like what we talked about earlier, where we're talking about email, right? If there can be a more active engagement of what requirements, what is possible via email in a cloud environment, email as a service, let's understand those things before we define what our requirements are and roll them out, because there could be something really good for you there.
You mentioned the RFI, and that whole process I find fascinating. I'd love to get a sense of being on the inside of that. How can somebody or some team at an agency possibly plow through all the stuff that, I mean, I'm sure you don't send somebody five pages when they ask for information. And so how do you, I just wonder how all that stuff, who reads all that stuff? I mean, how does that all get consumed, and how often do you see that information manifest itself when the agency says, okay, we now know what it is that we want you to do for us?
So a couple of things. First of all, I am not the person to answer the question of who reads all that stuff.
That was more rhetorical.
So I've never been
at least
on,
directed
on,
toward you.
I have yet to be on that side of the on that side of the baseline. But I do have a tremendous amount of respect for the people who go out and do that and request that information and do the serious evaluation, because it obviously happens. Your answer to your question, does it find its way in there? Absolutely, it does. I think that the key is the reason that's been given in the past for why the agencies don't want to wholeheartedly and aggressively engage industry for requirements gathering, understanding the possible is because of what you spoke about before. We don't want to give the impression that we want one particular solution over another. We're just trying to solve a problem.
Right.
And so I think that what we both government, industry, and the public need to understand is that the common goal is the important thing here, and we've got to get the right solution in place so that none of these programs end up as a headline on Federal News Radio for anything other than a resounding success. And so the ability of the government to have a successful implementation, I think, is directly proportional to the amount of early industry engagement that they do in understanding the possible, because it eliminates scope creep. It ensures that the tax dollars are getting spent on exactly the right thing that will accomplish exactly the goal.
The shame of it is, and I confess from my perspective, it's done this way. The projects that finish on time or early and on or under budget aren't sexy. And they don't make headlines. The only ones that do are the ones that wind up in the ash can, unfortunately. And that's not fair, because it creates this perception that I think is incorrect, that a lot of people have, that a lot of people that are in your business are not in it for the right reason. Is there a role, do you think, for you and your peers to play to help educate the taxpayer, who is the ultimate customer, that they are getting value a lot of the time, or maybe are they not getting as much value as they think they should be?
Well, somewhat.
It's a kind of an ethical question more than anything, I guess.
Yeah, somewhat loaded and interesting question.
Okay, well, I apologize for loading.
It's fine. I think that, so first of all, as part of the initiatives of the current administration, transparency is a big part of that. Now, transparency does a couple of things. One, it makes it easier for the people who want to call out the failing programs because they can see it every day. It's very easy to see performance versus budget versus goals and objectives on a timeline and be able to call out, well, this thing is clearly failing. Even with that transparency, people don't seem to go out and call out, well, here's how successful projects are being run today. Is there a role that we could play? Certainly. I think that the whole concept that we spoke about last time I was here around performance-based engagement and things like that is something that we can really point to and say, look, let's put incentives in place. Let's give transparency to the incentives that are in place to these contractors who are performing on time, who are performing and delivering the right solution under budget. And some agencies are doing that today. And it's great. Now, I don't know how widespread the news stories are ever going to be in that scenario. But I think there's a fair amount of very successful projects out there. The problem is you have to go look for them. They don't hit you in the face every day like the failures, quote unquote failures.
Well, and again, I think that's because the normal response from the average consumer of information is, oh, it finished at the price that it was supposed to finish at, and it finished when it was supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to work, and that's not necessarily news with a capital N. So I guess that's the reason for that.
Well,
and that's what makes your job as a vendor hard, I think, to be able to tell the guy that you meet at the barbecue and you tell him that you're a government contractor, and he goes, oh, yeah, use car salesman, you know, or a radio talk show host. We're the three. Those are the three professions that get the most reaction at the barbecue or the soccer game.
Well, the thing I'll point out to you is on time and on budget may not be newsworthy, but there's also been for some reason, ahead of time and under budget also has been equally non-newsworthy, which to me is somewhat inappropriate. I mean, these are projects that are truly being delivered in such an efficient way that it's improving, it's reducing the amount that the taxpayer is paying to get the job done.
We have to take another break, and we have just a few minutes left. I want to talk about the ticking that you're hearing in the background, which is the end of the fiscal year approaching. It's not as far away as you might think. There's not that much time left. And I want to get your sense of what is happening, if anything, as we try to beat the clock with Ryan McCullough of GovPlace on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, all right, it's the Geico Gecko here, and I've got a special message for all you government employees listening out there. So all you non-government people can go and make yourself a sandwich or whatever. Okay, are they gone? Right, so here's the big news. As a government employee, you could qualify for a federal employee discount on car insurance. And that's on top of Geico's already low rates. In other words, my friend, you could be the or more, and you could save 15% or more. And you'd be in good company, too. On average, federal employees who are GEICO customers stay GEICO customers for 12 years or more. And that's either because they like geckos or they like saving money. Well, maybe a little of both.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Hey, everyone. This is Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
How does the Commerce Department fit into the U.S. cyber strategy? Here's Mark Bareka, co-leader of the Internet Policy Task Force.
DHS has a substantial role in the cybersecurity space. We have the luxury, I'd say, of focusing in on the economic component, on the business community that sits outside the national cybersecurity space.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever, Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Which agency has the best food or cafeteria? Who has the best gym? What about the agency with the best overall location, the best parking or transportation options? Who's the best dressed Fed you know? Federal News Radio is having some fun this summer with our Best of the Federal Government feature. Throughout the summer, we'll ask you to vote for your favorites. Voting has officially begun. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for Best Of. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Best Of.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ryan McCullough of GovPlace, my guest. And as we said before the break, time is ticking on fiscal 2010. Fiscal 2011 starts, what, like a month and a half from? Well, no, it's just the beginning of August. So still a little bit of time to go.
It's August?
Yeah, I know. It's frightening, isn't it? I saw a back-to-school sale over the weekend, and I just wanted to run through the house screaming. It's pretty ridiculous. What does the end of the fiscal year mean? Are you starting to hear people that are calling you up and saying, I've got some money I've got to spend and I have this need and it's got to happen pretty quick?
Oh, well, let's see. We're not hearing as much of that just yet. I think what we are starting to see is the realization that there's a tremendous amount of money to be spent at this stage of the game. I think a lot of agencies have watched some fairly critical requirements shift to the right, as it were, in terms of the calendar and timeline. I think the spend has been delayed across a number of federal agencies at this stage. But I think there's a silver lining to this in that I think that that has in many parts been a consequence of doing some real in-depth analysis of what the appropriate IT investments are going to be. You look at agencies with a proper leadership in place that are saying these are I can responsibly spend this money on these programs, but there are certain ones that just don't make sense, and I'm not going to spend the money just to spend it, which I think is frankly where we need to get to if we're going to have an efficiently functioning government. And Roger Baker at the VA recently went through and kind of did an analysis himself to figure out what he could responsibly spend inside his environment, and he went back and delivered that message to Congress. So, that kind of leadership, I think, is causing some of the delays in spend, but I think we are going to see a number of agencies, just based on the delay in some spending we've seen at this point, really start to hit, I won't say the panic button, but it's gonna get noisy, and there's gonna be a lot of things flying here at the end of the fiscal year.
Will be interesting to follow it, and I will look forward to touching base with you in fiscal 2011 and talking some more about these issues, Ryan. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Francis.
Ryan McCullough of GovPlace on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of our program, the Freedom of Information Act is generating a lot of activity at your agency, more activity than in the past. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller paying attention to that and telling you more about the Department of Justice's recent survey of how agencies are doing with FOIA. That's hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.